sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK in the Wednesday edition. Travel day for the Nittany Lion basketball team as they open play in the Big Ten tournament tomorrow, which will be in this time slot tomorrow. They will play against Michigan by the time we get to probably about, I'd say about 5-6 minutes ago in the first half. That'll be about the time the show is supposed to begin. And, of course, we'll have that game for you right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, actually with a 2 o'clock airtime tomorrow from the United Center in Chicago. It is a big night for Bucknell basketball, a very big night for Bucknell basketball. They have built all season for this game. And and I talked to Patrick Chambers about this last night on the Penn State basketball show from Damon's, which you heard here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, because he's been through a multi-bid situation when he was an assistant at Villanova, and he was on the team that went to the Final Four. And he's also been the head coach when it's been a one-bid situation, and that's America East and Boston University. And he went to the championship game twice. The first time he lost, and they ended up going to the CBI. The second time, they won, and then went on to play Kansas in the NCAA tournament. And I asked, what is the pressure like in a one-bid conference compared to a multi-bid situation? And he said the pressure in a one-bid conference is exponentially higher, and you feel it all the way through. So for people who think that, well, look, they only played Navy and they just cruised through. No, the pressure is great to win that game. Oh, it's Army, a team they beat twice, you know, even though the one at West Point was very, very close. Again, the pressure is high. Now you get to this moment, a moment they were at a year ago, again on their home floor. They play tonight for the Patriot title and the right to go to the NCAAs. From day one, the schedule that Dave Paulson put together was to get to this moment. Now the moment has arrived. We'll talk about that. We'll rerun our interview later in the show with Dave Paulson. We're also going to hear from Ken Shurto in Olympic Wrestling, Greg Brown, the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, which is 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, the Hilscher's General Store hotline at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Hilscher's General Store located 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on Routes 11 and 15. Up next, Above the Noise, here's Dan Patrick.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us in the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's tournament time. More tickets were punched last night to the big dance. South Dakota State won last night. They're moving on. They're in. Valpo won last night. They're in for the first time since 2004. South Dakota State's interesting. They're in for the second straight year, and they have one of the better players in the tournament, Nate Walters. So watch out for that when you start filling out your brackets. Obviously, I have no idea who South Dakota State's going to get. But they battled for a long time last year, and Walters is a really good player. So just file that away for down the road. All right, in the open, I talked about the pressure. Now, the pressure can be eased, obviously, in a home court situation. Bucknell tonight is Lafayette. They split with Lafayette. They beat them in Lewisburg. They lost to them when they went to Lafayette. Lafayette has a really good year. You know, they swept Lehigh. I don't care if you have C.J. McCollum or not. That's not easy. And, of course, they split with Bucknell. They are a very, very good basketball team and have some of the same components I watched last year beat Penn State in the Jordan Center 61-57. Remember the game like it was yesterday on that December night. And Lafayette played really well. I mean, really. These are tonight you're going to see at Soika two really, really well-coached basketball teams. I mean, two really well-coached basketball teams. X's and O's, both get it. Defense, both get it. And they get their players to commit to it and play it. The staple for Bucknell all season has been their defense. And Mike Muscala, the rarity in college basketball, a 2,000-point, 1,000-rebound guy. They have devised every defense against Mike so far this season. You name the defense, they've devised it and tried to use it against him. It's really helped that a Cameron Ayers has stepped up. A Joe Willman plays the typical Joe Willman game. And Bryson Johnson. Bryson Johnson is just opens up the entire floor because of his three-point ability. But tonight's a championship game, and the bid is on the line. And there's just been this building process. Let's look at it from the Bucknell point of view. Dave Paulson, with a veteran team, wanted his team tested as often as possible in the non-conference schedule. So they went to Purdue and beat them. They went to Penn State with the idea they were going to face Tim Frazier. It turned out it was the first game after Tim Frazier, but Penn State won the game. Went to Missouri and took Missouri to the wire. And so you're playing a couple of Big Ten teams and an SEC team. I mean, this is the, you know, the kind of schedule he wanted to put together. And they've developed a little more of a bench, which has helped. Frazier's been very good at times this year. Going to be a good player for Bucknell down the road. And everything now rolls to this moment. Bucknell, in a multi-bid conference, would be an easy in. But as we all know, there's a difference between idealistically and realistically. And realistically, the Patriot gets one. That's the one that's determined tonight. So it is an NCAA play-in game. Now, once you get in, then the fun really begins. Because what we have seen this season in college basketball is the single most wide-open season I have ever seen in college basketball, without question, where anybody can beat anybody on a given night. I have always felt that over time, the parity in men's basketball has gradually expanded, where it's gone from, you know, maybe, you know, let's face it, anyone in the top 50 can beat one another. Then it turned out as time went, anybody in the top 100 could beat one another. Now it's anybody in the top 150 can beat one another. And maybe expanded a little bit beyond that. Thus, you see, for example, a Penn State beating a Michigan, a Penn State going to the wire against Wisconsin. Sagarin has Penn State 131, by the way. RPI has Penn State, I think, 177 or something like that. But they're not your typical last-place conference team that has no shot. Now, theoretically, on paper, losing Tim Frazier, they should be a team like that, but this hasn't played out like that. Patrick Chambers has not allowed that to happen. Thus, they go into tomorrow's game, and it's a who-knows game. And you don't know what the mental state is of Michigan after the loss on Sunday to Indiana. Michigan could be really angry and set out to prove it. They could be, look, Penn State beat us the last time. Well, guess what? We're not going to allow that. They could come out with that kind of resolve tomorrow. Or they could be, I can't believe we went from a chance to share the Big Ten championship, losing the game at the free throw line, then losing the game overall, and now, instead of playing even on Friday, we're playing Thursday. you don't know. A lot of tomorrow is going to be determined as what Michigan's mental state is heading into the game. Are they determined and ready to set the record straight? A realistic possibility. Or are they still in the tank from Sunday? Because remember, this is not a veteran Michigan team. Trey Burke is a sophomore. Glenn Robinson III is a freshman. Nick Stauskas is a freshman. Mitch McGarry is a freshman. Tim Hardaway's a junior. Jordan Morgan's a junior. But this is a freshman-laden basketball. Caris LeVert, Spike Albrecht, they're freshmen. So you don't know what their mental state is going into tomorrow's game at 2:30. Now, for Bucknell and Lafayette, these are two teams with great momentum going into this game. And that's one of the reasons why winners of this game, such as tonight, are very dangerous on the opening day of the NCAA tournament. Why? Because all 37 schools that receive at-large bids to the NCAA are going into the NCAAs on a loss. That's why you're an at-large berth. Meanwhile, the team they match up with, either Bucknell or Lafayette tonight, is going in with all the momentum. They're a champion. They just won their conference tournament. That makes a big difference, I think, in the opening round. You know, even though it's the NCAAs, you start fresh, you see things that happen on the floor where the confidence of one team that's been winning, winning, winning versus one that just lost actually comes out. I watched 2 years ago. I'm in Tucson. Penn State's going to play Temple. It was the opening game. Now, we know how it ended. Juan Fernandez at the buzzer hit the game-winning shot. Temple advanced. Started watching the second game, which was between San Diego State, the Mountain West champion. But they were going up against Northern Colorado, the Big Sky champion. And I'd never seen Northern Colorado play in my life. Never. Northern Colorado came out and really played well, and they hung with San Diego State for a long time. And that's the part, when I watched that game, that was the one I looked at and said, you know what? That's where winning a championship matters. Those kids have just gone through in a one-bit situation in the Big Sky. Pressure to win a quarterfinal did. Pressure to win a semifinal did. Pressure to win a final did. Where, guess what? They have all of the momentum going in and the confidence going in that a champion has. That's what makes these schools dangerous, and it's more dangerous than ever because the balance and the parity in college basketball is at its greatest level ever. That's why you have seen TCU beat Kansas, where it wasn't a complete fluke because TCU then went out and beat Oklahoma last week. Now, is Penn State better than TCU? Yes. Penn State is better than TCU. That's why Penn State, you know, they beat Michigan and so forth, and Penn State's played better down the stretch more consistently. TCU's been blown out of games and so forth. Penn State's only had that one against Minnesota. But there's a parity in college basketball now that is great. There's a parity in college basketball now which I think is special. Is the talent level different than it was, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago? Yeah, because of the one-and-done players. Kentucky should be another dominant team this year. But they had so many players that went out early, they're not going to be a dominant team. There's not going to be a dominant team. Because they're all playing. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is playing with the Charlotte Bobcats now. Anthony Davis is out there playing with the New Orleans Hornets right now. I mean, that's just the way it is with the one-and-done. And the one-and-done player, it does make a big difference in what we're seeing on the floor. But that doesn't mean that the people want to see an exciting product. There's talent out there. Everybody has talent. I mentioned Nate Walters from South Dakota State. Talented player. Very talented. Everybody has somebody that can make some plays. And people want to see good games. People want to see good games. And I think this will be as wide open a tournament as ever because you're going to see good games. And that starts tonight with Bucknell Lafayette at Soika this evening. Doug Bergson will have the call this evening. All right, news coming up bottom of the hour. Next half hour, Ken Sherto here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Steve Jones Show here on this Wednesday. Tomorrow, the Nittany Lion basketball team will be in this time slot playing against Michigan in the opening round of the Big Ten tournament at the United Center in Chicago as the Big Ten tournament makes its return to Chicago after a five-year run in Indianapolis. All right, Indianapolis does a great job hosting the tournament. All right, a great job. And Bankers Life Fieldhouse is as fine a basketball facility as you'll ever want to see. But I see the Big East for years establishing itself at Madison Square Garden. And Madison Square Garden is an incredible venue to host the tournament. But I'm still of a – I grew up in New England. I've been here, you know, at Penn State now for, you know, over 30 years. 31st season doing Penn State basketball. It's been my heading into my, 22nd season on football, my 14th as the play-by-play announcer. And this, I don't quite have the Midwest view of things as opposed to others that I talk with within the conference that grew up and lived around Midwest basketball. Indianapolis does a great job. And there was a Chicago Sun-Times poll years ago where they took, at that time, there were 11 of us announcing games of the Big Ten. And we were asked a series of questions by the reporter from the Chicago Sun-Times. And one of them was, where would you like to have the Big Ten tournament, Indianapolis or Chicago? And this was the point, it was decision time between the two cities. And the vote was 9-2 in favor of Indianapolis, which, again, I'll tell you, does a great job with the tournament. And the setup's great. The hotels are so close to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Their hotels are all right in between Lucas Oil Stadium and Bankers Life. And Bankers Life is as good a basketball facility as you'll ever see. It's built specifically for hoops. It's incredible. But the vote was 9-2 in favor of Indy among the announcers. Now, I am assuming that Dave Ennett of Northwestern voted for Chicago. I know where the other vote came from. In fact, that was quoted in the story. And my quote was, the Big East has Madison Square Garden in New York. The Big Ten has Chicago. Use it. I still feel that way about it. I mean, does Chicago embrace the Big Ten tournament? Yeah, not to the extent Indianapolis does. But there's something about the big venue, the big stage that Chicago brings. And they'll be back on that big stage tomorrow. It's sold out better than 21,000. All right, wrestling. Penn State Big Ten Championship last week, third straight. Four Big Ten champions, Quentin Wright, Matt Brown, David Taylor, Eddie Ruth, all 10 qualified for the NCAAs. Penn State looking for their third straight NCAA championship. We'll talk more about that next week. But, of course, the Olympic movement has been important. And recently, here in the Sunbury Motor Studio, I brought in Ken Sherto to talk about that because the former Olympian has been very passionate, and I asked him about the fundraising so far, which is better than $1 million.
Yeah, it's awesome. The wrestling community has really stepped to the plate. Over $1 million has been raised in the past couple weeks through direct donations as well as some pledges from people that are going to put it forward. And they're going to work really hard to politic the international governing body. Basically, our leadership internationally fell asleep at the wheel. Even domestically here, USA Wrestling could have done better. And there's a lot of lobbying that needs to be done. It's a shame that that's the situation. It's sad. But the IOC likes to be schmoozed, if you will. And the international wrestling community had not done that and kind of frowned upon it. And this was kind of the IOC executive committee's way of saying, hey, you guys need to do what we tell you. It's really just 15 people that got in a room. It's not the whole International Olympic Committee. It's 15 high-level board members, though, and they decided that they're going to make a wake-up call to the sport of wrestling. I'm looking to turn it into a positive. And in addition to keeping wrestling Olympics, I mean, we need to create a more exciting sport, promote it better, get people more in tune, not just to the X's and O's of wrestling, which is typical wrestling coach talk, but to actually embrace our sport and try to create more aggressive wrestling, more exciting wrestling, more risk taking, and right. just create a more enjoyable sport.
Well, see, that's what, and I'll take a completely different sport for you, and that is the NBA. The NBA changed its game dramatically by putting more offense into it, and the NFL's put more offense into it. Sports that put more offense into their game are getting results out of their game in terms of interest. How important is that part of it, the aggressive offensive part of wrestling that needs to be appreciated?
I think it's important. I don't think it's the core of this particular issue. I do appreciate the NFL and the NBA and the exciting things they brought in the 80s and the diversification they brought to their game over the recent decades.
Yeah,
I can relate to
that. They brought more scoring in. Okay,
absolutely.
People want to see scoring.
Yeah.
All right? So in wrestling, you can score, but you know there are ways to do it.
I think they're just going to tweak that a little bit and create more exciting rules. The coaches need to preach more action. There's too much conservatism. At the high levels of wrestling, the athletes are so great and so powerful, it's hard to score on them. But we need to create rules that are going to reward the offensive wrestler, and that's part of the mission. That there's been a committee formed not only to raise money and to lobby the International Olympic Committee, but also to update the rules to make it a little bit more exciting internationally. I think college wrestling's relatively exciting.
Yes, it is.
And high school wrestling, you and I have done that together.
Yes.
Sometimes that's more exciting than college because there's more flopping around and flying. But at the elite level internationally, there's so much scouting and there's just a lot of caution. So I'm excited to see the changes that'll take place.
What changes do you advocate internationally to put more attack into the game?
Well, the way FILA works is they take care of the rules. So I recommend more rewarding for scoring. I mean, if you're going to create offense, if you're going to take risk, reward that. I mean, give more points for the guy that's taking the chances as opposed to rewarding the guy that just sits back and scores the end of a period.
All right. The next part is, what can the average fan do? You have on your website, you have a lot of talking points that people can discuss about this, but what can they do in the lobby besides the money part of it?
Well, I think the first step is to get on the webpage and follow what's going on and educate, you know, what's up. And it's, the money is a key part of it, but they could write letters. We haven't assigned who they're going to go to yet. I mean, as far as the actual public getting engaged beyond the scope of making small donations to the Keep Wrestling Fund and the Keep Olympic Wrestling Fund, right now the public can just watch and stay up to tune. That's why I'm here, to tell you to keep an eye on it. The IOC has not pulled the plug on wrestling. There's just a committee that's recommended that it not be kept in the game 7 years from now. So we have, you know, a few months to work on this and get her straight.
Well, what they've done is they've put wrestling, they've taken it out of the automatic for 2020. It's in 2016. But in 2020, okay, they're in the pool with seven other sports to be considered for the 26. That's where they are right now.
That's correct. And in May, there's going to be a presentation. Two of the leaders on the committee are guys I was in the Olympics with, Jim and Bill Shear. One, Jim Shear, was the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee. So we've got a good leader in position. The international guys dropped the ball. Some of our national leaders, I mean, really in wrestling, once you're done wrestling, you get on with your life, you go into business, you do whatever you're going to do. And a lot of our leaders are coming back to the forefront and trying to get into the international governing body. And we're going to make a presentation in May to the IOC and to try to get wrestling back into the Olympics for 2020.
Okay, so now, okay, when you've talked to those within your community, and it's also important to get the casual fan engaged, and that's one of the reasons you're here and you do this. To get them engaged, what would that mean? Because the diehards will be there, but if you can get a groundswell, what can that mean?
Well, once we decide who we're going to communicate with, whether it be the IOC president or the IOC committee or what it is, I mean, there's just millions of people in the wrestling community that are going to communicate and let it be known and let their voice be heard. Right now, it's just, I mean, my main message is, hey, wrestling's not being dropped. It's been recommended by a small group of people for 7 years from now. And right now, we're taking action. We're raising money. We're getting organized. The coalition that's been formed is about 20 leaders, and they've laid out a game plan. They've documented it. Like you said, you can go through my webpage and get the details if you're interested in the minutia. But the bottom line is action's being taken. And like I said 10 minutes ago, I feel like our leadership, and I'm not involved in that part of the leadership, but they felt our paid leaders at USA Wrestling, the International Committee,
they assumed it was going to be in there, and they didn't even have a worry about it.
That pretty much sums it up, and they should have. There was yellow flags sent along the way by the International Olympic Committee that they've asked us to spruce up the sport as far as rules and different types of subtleties, and they didn't respond.
Didn't respond to it. And the oddity is you're talking about a venue that's sold out, so they probably get comfortable with that. You're talking about qualifying tournaments that weeded down to 71 nations being involved. So they probably felt comfortable with that. And they were asleep at the switch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was in the Olympics, there was over 100 countries involved. And like you said, the International Olympic Committee asked us to take action in the past decade. We went from 10 weights to 7 weights, yeah. Both for freestyle and Greco. They reduced the women's weights, too. So we made some reductions. We thought we made them happy. Apparently, they want more. But they haven't said, you know, what's baffling, and this is the politics of it, they haven't told us what they want. They haven't told us what's wrong exactly, really at all, and they haven't told us what they want. So right now is a research thing and getting through the politics of it, and we're investing time and money into getting this solved and straightened out. You know, on a local level, you know, although wrestling's booming in many spots, like Penn State, for example, We coaches locally, the 600-plus high school coaches, need to work hard to promote the sport and put fans in the seats and get kids out for the team. You know, we too can't fall asleep at the wheel. You know, you can't assume people are going to show up. We have to promote the sport. We have to get students to the events. Yeah. I mean, it's when I say we, I mean high school coaches, youth coaches across our state. Mm-hmm. And we in Pennsylvania are spoiled. We have quite a good culture of wrestling, but there's many pockets that need, you know, a good shot in the arm, and coaches have to keep working hard to get kids out for wrestling and to get fans in the seats.
And we just went through the Northeast Regionals, the Northwest Regionals in Altoona and so forth. We're now up to the PIAAs. The excitement of that, and in this movement forward, to send a message, what can the PIAAs mean? Because you'll have a lot of wrestling fans in one area at one time.
Yeah, that's an awesome event. I'm going to be there promoting this effort to keep wrestling Olympics and having people get on the webpage and basically get on the mailing list. That's one thing I would ask people to do, is get on the mailing list so you can keep up to speed. But the PIAAs is an amazing event. I mean, they fill it two times over. Double A sells out and Triple A sells out in the Giant Center.
Right.
So the wrestling population in Pennsylvania is going to be there. We're going to work to educate them and get them up to speed on what's going on. And, you know, there's going to be multiple future Olympians in that arena. I mean, lots at stake. Pennsylvania has great wrestling. And those kids, they are the 2020s. The Zane Rutherfords of the future. Zane's a senior, the top senior in Pennsylvania. He's coming to
District
Penn State.
District 4, yep.
Yeah, and he's going to be there, and he's going to have a chance to make 2016, but really his best time when he'll be in his physical prime is 2020.
Yeah, here's the problem when you talk about that in terms of dreams. You and I know at the Olympic level, it usually is an older, more experienced wrestler. So it takes time. Like 2020 would be his time, probably, just in maturation, correct?
Absolutely. It's the ideal time, although you got to hope guys will make it younger. Like David Taylor, Quentin Wright, Ed Root, they all tried out for the Olympic team last year. They had a fighting chance, but it didn't quite happen for them. I like to think it will happen for Zane in 3 years. For me, it happened while I was at Penn State.
Sure.
It was the exception rather than the rule. But yeah, usually you're more mature. Usually 25 to 28 is the average age.
And that's why this is a long-term proposition that you're looking at. You're thinking of those who are at that age now and those who are in junior high now, because they'd be the ones looking at 20. It's not just 2020. You're looking at 2024. 28, 32. You're looking long term, and that's the big picture of this.
Absolutely. I'm fighting for my students. I'm fighting for the kids that I train. I mean, I run the gold medal training camp. We're looking for, of course, local gold medals, state championship gold medals, but you got to live the dream, the Olympic dream. It's only a few people are going to get there and have a chance to do that, but it is the dream a lot of these kids pursue. It's good motivation for young people. It's exciting. I mean, hey, wrestling's going to survive no matter what happens, the Olympic wrestling. But it's certainly something that's worthy of a fight to keep going. And in the wrestling community, we're fighters. We're not going to roll over for some bunch of International Olympic Committee, you know, socialists.
Look, you have kids out here about to start Little League Baseball season. Every one of them thinks they're going to play for the Pirates, the Cardinals, or whatever.
MLB, okay? Baby.
Okay? But the same thing with a young wrestler. Their goal is to get to that is the ultimate goal, is the Olympic Games. That's their goal in life.
It's one of them. College wrestling's huge, too, though. I mean, especially here in the backyard with Penn State, we could have our boys living the dream and going to Penn State in the future, so we'll be okay. But, yeah, the Olympics is the next step up. It's the, I guess, the analogous to Major League Baseball, what have you, and that's the point at hand.
Here's a guess, and it's only a guess on my part. We have seen a real change in the last, I want to say 8 years, 9 years, maybe long, maybe a dozen years, where the Far East, and we know who the major force is in the Far East, I think you're seeing that they're trying to use sports the way the Eastern Bloc, and of course you wrestled life in the Eastern Bloc time, where they wanted to use sports as a vehicle to promote culture and society. Okay? And I think that's one of the forces that wrestling's up against here. That's why the organization part is so important, because they're going to be organized to put in a multi-metal sport that fits what they do.
Are you going to the wushu topic again?
Well, so it's more than that.
I'm not sure where you're going.
It could be wushu. It could be karate. It could be a variety of things. But you're talking about something that gets multiple medals. And I don't want you to discount that is a powerful lobby of Eastern Rim countries.
Yeah. You know, after you educated me on wushu the last time we conversed, I got on the webpage and researched it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like a rhythmic gymnastics kind of, except with knives and swords.
Yeah.
You taught me something new, Steve.
Yeah, but karate is also one of the other eight sports as well. These are multiple medal opportunities, which is what they want to pad the medal count. That's why it's a lobby that can't be discounted. I don't care what sport they pick, but in terms of what they're promoting.
Yeah, China's definitely a strong lobby.
And they're not going to be getting medals in wrestling.
Well, they could. They're actually on the brink of great success. And Japan and South Korea, as well as North Korea.
Japan's always been good.
Yeah, those Far East countries are good. Specifically China, though. Yeah, I mean, they want as many martial arts as possible. Frankly, so do I. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Let's have a bunch of martial arts.
I don't care, Ken, if they went to 35 sports and they all got in. I could care less. I just don't want sports cut, and I don't want this one cut.
Right. You're obviously preaching to the choir, and the politics of international sports is very, very tricky. Fortunately, I think the pluses are better than the negatives. You mentioned the Far East, but really, when you talk about the Russia and the former Russian republics, coupled with Iran and Turkey and Bulgaria, all those Eastern European blocks, really the biggest problem, I think, more than the Far East, is the Western European bloc. They don't appreciate and value wrestling. It's not really part of their culture. They don't understand it. I mean, it's just not a popular sport in that small group of Western European countries, and a lot of the IOC is made up of some of those Western European country leaders.
The Bulgarian hunger strike.
Yeah, that guy's a piece of work.
I guess he'll do enough to make sure he's well enough to participate. But
he's put on a few pounds since his Olympic gold medal, so he has a few to lose. But whatever it takes to bring attention to our quest.
That.
Yeah,
right.
It does. It brings national, international media attention to what's going on. I got to think the media really ran with this reclamation. I mean, it's good and bad. I mean, the bad is that there's almost been an overreaction to the dropping of wrestling, but the good is that people care.
Right.
I mean, people are like, wrestling? You gotta be kidding me. Even people that don't know anything about wrestling, their gut reaction is, I thought that was one of the purest sports. What are they doing?
What about the reaction of the United States Olympic Committee? I don't mean just, you know, obviously FILA and what they have to do. What about the U.S. Olympic Committee?
I feel
like
they've been a little bit too softball and dropping it all on USA Wrestling. I mean, the U.S. Olympic Committee's got to be careful, because obviously we have a lobby for karate and judo and other sports in our country, so that they haven't really come out strongly and made a statement that I haven't seen or heard it.
Right.
They're throwing it on our USA Wrestling. They're saying, hey, the ball's in your court. You got to run with it. And, hey, generally, I think a USA Wrestling leadership is good. But in this case, they definitely got lulled into it, as we talked about, and were too complacent. And they entrusted our international governing leadership called FILA to do it, and they didn't.
Well, let's remember which country throws the most media dollars into it when it comes to the TV contract.
Get Rodman out there.
Yeah, that was a joke yesterday. Stephanopoulos, he was ready to go at it. You know, it's just crazy there, and that you threw me off with Rodman. But the TV.
Threw the North Koreans off too. Like, what? Really?
Yeah, really. They were like, hey, as far as TV goes, TV's kind of really pulled. I love the swimming and gymnastics and all that stuff, but they really put wrestling by the wayside. They've decided, hey, we're going to put all the pretty little girls and the young people on television and get away from the guy crowd. I mean, pretty much the guys will watch anything in the Olympics. They'll watch the Olympics.
Well, in prime time, it's figure skating for the Winter Olympics. You'll see that in Soika next year. Figure skating in prime time every step of the way. Gymnastics, especially women's gymnastics in prime time when they get to the Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, we need some wrestlers to get on NBC and start taking a leadership role there. And yeah, I'm trying to get in there too. I'd love to do the Olympics, but now they're definitely putting wrestling on late at night. That doesn't help the cause either.
The fact that Kale has been so adamant about it, and Kale's a soft-spoken guy, but having him
be as adamant about this? What has at least that meant to have that heavyweight voice?
Oh, absolutely. We want every heavyweight in the country getting after it and speaking up and talking out. Mikhail's very engrossed in what he's doing with Penn State Wrestling, you know, and he's said specifically he's not the leader to take the role. We need to rely on USA Wrestling, but the fact that he and all other, you know, coaches are speaking out is good, and that's what we need.
When's your next camp, by the way?
My next camp, every weekend practically, but this weekend's a big one. We have a traditional one the Sunday after the high school state tournament. A lot of guys, right after the states, it's the committed guys that want to get right back to it, and we meet Sunday, right after PIAAs this Sunday. So we get to it and most every weekend and then all summer long.
It's always great seeing you.
You too. Thanks for having me in the studio.
And joining us in the Sunbury Motor Studio, Ken Shurto. You hear the passion in his voice, and that's what's going to be the driving force in this. I will not con you here. It is, frankly, an uphill fight for wrestling at this stage. Anytime a sport has been put into the pool, it has literally never come back. All right? So that's the uphill fight they face. Now, a guy like Ken Shurto, absolutely determined to the wire, along with so many that are passionate about wrestling, to make sure that in 2020 it is in the Olympic Games. Now, wrestling will be in the 2016 Olympics in Rio, but now they're in that pool of 8 sports that has to be selected for the 26th spot in the Olympic Games for 2020 at a site still to be determined. Next half hour, we'll revisit Dave Paulson. They play tonight with Lafayette. We had a chance to talk with Dave on the show on SJS on Monday. Dave Paulson next half hour. Greg Brown final half hour from Bradenton, Florida on News Radio 1070 WKOK.